Hi, this is Dean Koontz. Welcome to my podcast. Readers often ask me why most of my books are set in California and why it seems to play almost as big a role in the stories as some of the characters do. Well, I can only say that I lived in Pennsylvania for a large part of my life, and in particular, for the first 9 years of our marriage, Jared and I lived in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. This is not one of the glamour spots of the earth, although it certainly is a pleasant place. But the weather is singularly dismal at times, and one spring we had 40 days of rain with no sign of blue sky. It was overcast for 40 days. It was a very biblical moment. And Gerda said, you know what? Considering what you do, we can live anywhere we want. There's no reason to live in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I'm kind of slow sometimes, so this was a giant revelation to me that we didn't have to live in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania to be a writer. And then I looked around, and most writers don't live in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So we packed up everything we owned, and we decided to move west. We had been in California once on a vacation, and that would have been our destination, except at that time, Pennsylvania had about 16 different taxes. And there were local taxes. There was a right to work in the city of Harrisburg tax. There was a property tax, of course. There was just about every kind of tax you can imagine. And we were drawn by the allure of Nevada, which had no taxes. And we ended up, after a side trip up to Lake Tahoe, where we decided the winters would be untenable, we ended up in Las Vegas. And we decided, since it wasn't our intention to live in Las Vegas to begin with, we weren't sure what we would think of this, so we decided to rent a house rather than to buy one. We looked at a number of houses, and we found one through a realtor, and it was a great house. It was expansive. It had a lot of room. It had a wonderful pool, a very big pool, and the only drawback we saw initially was that the house came with two large desert tortoises, and the owner, a doctor, said, I want you to look after the turtles for the first month you're here, until I can find a place to put them. And he warned us in particular that the turtles, which had full rein of the backyard, including the pool area, would drown if they fell in the pool. So we needed to look out for them. And if one was in the pool, we needed to dive in and bring it out. So I thought this is liable to be a pretty difficult first month, but not anything we couldn't handle. And I didn't realize until we moved in that the turtles had another drawback. Desert tortoises are very large. And let's just say that the business they leave behind is something like the road apples of a horse. So you're dealing with considerable amount of refuse, shall we say. So we took the house anyway, and Gerda went back east to pack up with the movers. And I stayed there to go buy a bed, which we weren't moving, and a few other things, and to get my office set up and to get a desk. And so I did that. But the doctor who was renting it to us started coming by to visit every day, took a liking to me. And he was a kind of interesting guy at first, but only at first. And one of the first things he said to me, around the moment where he ceased to be less interesting than alarming, he was visiting, and I was trying to herd him toward the front door and get him out of the house so I could return to my work, because I had been talking with him for over 2 hours. And he brought me to the front door, and he said, do you see this door? And, of course, I saw it. I was trying to usher him through it. And he said, be very careful of opening this door at night. He said, I haven't said anything to you, but my wife and I had a very ugly divorce. And she wanted this house, and I ended up with it. And he said, she's threatened to kill me. So I've put a steel plate in the front door, and you shouldn't open the front door at night before looking through the lens to see who's out there. But don't worry, she can't shoot you through the door because it's got a steel plate in it. Well, this door was a panel door, and the desert sun tends to work on panel doors to move the paneling away from the frames. And the sun begins to show through the little cracks that appear between panel and frame. And I could see the sun through various little cracks, and I could tell there was no steel panel in the door. But for some reason, I did believe the part about the psychopathic wife who wants to shoot him. He went away, and I was very careful not to answer the door at night, or during the day either, for that matter, without knowing who was out there. And the visits kept coming, and the doctor kept regaling me with stories about his horrendous marriage. And then one day he also followed me through the house drinking 16-ounce cans of Coors. I don't even know if they have 16-ounce cans. I guess they still do, but in those days, they were a new invention, and much beloved by heavy beer drinkers, over the 12-ounce can. So he would follow me around to 16-ounce cans of Coors. And one day, he'd been there for an extreme long amount of time, and he said, I need another can of beer. And so I followed him out the car, feeling I could conduct him into the car and get him out of there and get back to my work. And he opened the back door of the car and threw the empty beer can into the back of his car, and littering the floor were a lot of other beer cans. I couldn't count high enough to count them. And a cooler. And he took the lid off the cooler, and he took the can of Coors out of the ice. And as he tilted the can toward him to open it, he saw his wristwatch. And he looked at his watch and said, "Oh, my God, I'm late for an appendectomy." Leaped into the car and drove off at high speed. Now, we had remembered that he had told us that he had practiced medicine in Arizona and in New Mexico and was no longer welcome there. And we thought that had been a joke until we got to know him better. And as it turned out, somebody who knew him well said, "No, he's learning to speak Spanish fluently because he thinks he's going to have to end up practicing in Mexico." So we were beginning to think that this house that came with a doctor's attention 24/7 was not necessarily a positive thing. And then another issue began to arise. The terrible odor began to come up out of the carpet. Gerda still wasn't back. And I was finding it difficult to sleep at night, not because my love was not with me, but because this stench was filling the house. And I began to wonder whether anybody had been burying bodies in the foundation. Then I was talking to a neighbor next door who let it be known to me that there had been 26 animals living in this house, none of them housebroken. She said it included dogs, cats, monkeys, she said, and I believe her, desert tortoises, which are the ones now outside, and various exotic other creatures, and that obviously they hadn't replaced the carpet, they'd only shampooed it. So we had a specialist come in to look at the carpet and tell us what we needed to do, and he said, "What you need to do is take up the carpet and throw it away, take up the pad and throw it away, sandblast the slab of the foundation, and reseal it and put in new pad and carpet, because this is so terrible, it'll never be dealt with by shampoo or any other means." So, therefore, we had to get out of this lease, because we weren't going to carpet this guy's house for nothing, and he wasn't going to carpet the house for us. Fortunately, we were able to get out of the lease by making it clear the house wasn't habitable, and it was a health risk, and he let us go. So the next house we found, also through a reputable realtor, was owned by a lawyer who was trying to lease the house for his parents, who lived in Los Angeles. And he was living there with his nephew, he said, and we made a deal very quickly and leased the house. And they had some things in there, some furniture, not a lot. They had a wardrobe full of clothes. They had various items they could get out in about a day. And he said, "We'll have it all out of here in a week." And so we arranged to move there in 1 week from the stench-filled house in which we were living. And we hired a moving company, and the morning of the move, I showed up at the house and knocked on the door and got no response, rang the bell, got no response. And I knew our movers were coming, because it wasn't a lot to move. We didn't have a lot that we'd moved from the east in the way of furniture, and we hadn't bought new yet, so they were moving mostly books. Boldly, I tried the doorknob and discovered the lock had been broken. And I opened the door and looked inside and still saw the furniture, still saw that nothing looked any different than the carpets were supposed to have been cleaned, and those hadn't been. And suddenly, the lawyer appeared in his underwear and said, "Oh, my God, we forgot what day it was, but we'll get a truck and we'll be out of here in an hour." And I didn't see how they could get a truck and be out of there in an hour, but they got dressed very quickly, and he and his nephew left the house and went off in search of a truck, and 2 hours later, they hadn't returned, and our moving van appeared. And I said to the, called the realtor, and I said, "What are we supposed to do here? I've gone in and I've looked. Their clothes are still in the closet, not as many as before, but the furniture is still here. And she said, well, you've got a lease. Throw their clothes out on the lawn and put their furniture out and put yours in there. And I said, well, I can't do that. I don't want to be touching their belongings. I don't want my people to be doing that. And she said, but you have a valid lease. And as I'm talking to her and listening to this valid lease business, somebody behind me says, what are you doing in my house? I turned around and discovered the true owner of the house, who was standing there with two police officers. And as it turned out, the gentleman from whom we'd rented the house had been the previous tenant, who had listed it for lease, had managed to persuade a realtor that he was the true owner. Obviously, the realtors in Las Vegas at that time didn't do a lot of background checking, and he leased it to us, took first and last month and a security deposit, and fled, leaving behind a few of the clothes. Turned out he had no relationship to the owner, and it wasn't true that he was a lawyer. What it was true was that he was a sociologist who taught at a major university in Southern California and who had a gambling addiction. The owner of the house, the actual owner, didn't want us to stay there because he didn't know us any more than he had known these people. And when I told him I was a writer, he immediately was highly suspicious of me because of that. So we had to put everything we owned in storage and start looking for another house and live in a motel until we found it. When we found the house, it took us about a week. It turned out to be owned by the comedian Rip Taylor. If you know Rip Taylor, he's the guy with the huge mustache, has a lot of fun with the toupee he wears, and throws confetti all over the audience when he enters the theater. Rip turned out to be one terrific guy, just about as wacky in real life as on the stage, but a terrific guy and a genuine gentleman. And we lived in Rip's house for about a year, during which we bought a house in Las Vegas, remodeled it, and sold it without ever living in it, and moved to California. That 1 year sojourn in Nevada told us we weren't destined for there. And when we moved to California and found our first place here, we knew it was the promised land for us. And nowhere we have ever lived has felt more like home than Orange County, California, which is very different than the way they portray it in TV and in anything else you've ever read about it. But for us, it's a little piece of paradise. My new book is The Darkest Evening of the Year. And why don't you visit us at deankuntz.com, where we have a lot of interesting things for you to see, question and answers section, news about new books and projects. Thank you very much for listening.